The NAFTA podcast.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
Welcome back to the NAFTA podcast. We're continuing our season preview series with another special guest, the host and voice of the most raw and authentic Liverpool podcast. We're happy to welcome from the Liverpool groove, Jay. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing, man?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Absolutely. Excited to talk about Liverpool. Excited to talk about, you know, at least one game. We got another one coming up tomorrow. I know we had mentioned before we started here, we're from Ohio. There's obviously the Browns and the Bengals and Cincinnati and Cleveland. There's, you know, kind of a very obvious geographic divide there. But it's a little bit different in Liverpool. How did you become a Liverpool fan with Everton there? Was it like a family thing? Was it a certain player or a certain manager that kind of got you going that way? Or what was it?
So I was definitely a family thing. My whole family are Liverpool fans. Mm-hmm. In Liverpool, you get this odd thing happening where you can have a real split of Liverpool and Everton fans in the same family. Like, you can have siblings supporting different teams. It's very strange, but I'm one of the few families in the city that is just pure Liverpool. So I didn't have much of a choice in the matter, and I'm glad of that, to be honest. But I think the thing that really cemented it for me was, like, Michael Owen. He's like my first memory of Liverpool. Watching him burst on the scene, his goal against Argentina in the 98 World Cup. I knew it was the right decision at that point.
Right. So you had mentioned like the family divide. You said that's not very common, or it is kind of common.
So it's very common. Let's say you can have like families where you can have two brothers in the family, one supports Liverpool and one supports Everton. It can be that divided. It's crazy. I don't think you'll get it anywhere else.
It's so interesting, just because when we've done these previews in America, in the US, our route to our fandom is different, right? Like, we get to pick. None of us, truly, really, none of us are born into fandom. None of us, my dad still doesn't watch football, still doesn't watch soccer. So we made these decisions on our own. And I think that, Michael, like, how you ended up becoming a Liverpool fan is actually not similar. Obviously, we didn't have any family ties, but you had one player that you were like, oh, this is the guy.
Yeah, so I think it was 2007, we were in Disney. We went to Epcot and went to, like, the England branch there. And I walked in, and I think it's the shirt I have right here. I found that and picked it out. And just because at soccer practice, people would wear jerseys. I didn't have like a jersey. I wasn't like super into soccer, but I was starting to play. And then I went to soccer with it on, and they all knew way more than I did. So they were telling me about Liverpool and stuff like that. And that was happened to be when I started watching, was the year Torres just absolutely tore it up. And that's been my favorite player. And then since then, Bobby Firmino too, even though he's gone now. Both, I think I was a goalie, so I tend to go towards the strikers because it's what I couldn't achieve. So.
Yeah, I mean, Torres was special. I think he kind of made a lot of Liverpool fans fall in love again with Liverpool. Obviously, I think the 90s and the 2000s weren't the greatest time for Liverpool, even though we did still have some success. And Torres really was like a big deal at the time. So yeah, it was a great time to get involved.
Absolutely. So kind of speaking just on that, getting people excited, you know, there's obviously ups and downs. A couple years ago was a massive upswing for us. It was probably, we're going to look back, it's going to be like one of the best eras ever. This year specifically, and I kind of share the same sentiment as the podcast I listened to where you were talking, what are you excited about? Like, when you go or watch the game, what is the thing that you want to see the most from this Liverpool team this year?
I think mainly just, I want to see players that want to be at the club. I want to see players that are willing to put everything on the line for the shirt. I want to see players who are willing to it's, it sounds a bit dramatic, but die for the shirt. You know, I want to see, that passion. I think some of the players over the years we've had who haven't been maybe the best in terms of ability, they've won over the fans by the tenacity, by the work rate, by just the sheer effort. You know, your Lucas Leiva, Jordan Henderson, these players that just, for a lot of people, wouldn't have made it at a club like Liverpool, but because they never gave up, they endeared themselves to the fans. And I just want to see that. I want to see the effort. I want to see just commitment to getting Liverpool back to where we should be.
You mentioned before we go into like further into what you're excited about this year, maybe, and you both are going to be able to complain about what you're not excited about this year too, but you both have said there's a single player that really got you back into it and really, you know, invigorated you to become a bigger fan. Michael and I have that benefit of like me being the City fan, him being the Liverpool fan. The past 5 years for us has been tense, but it's been fun, especially, you know, we're not from the UK. So it's like, it's kind of removed and we get to experience it. I know Michael mentioned Firmino. I think for me, even as a City fan, like I can't help but love that guy. Like I love everything about Bobby Firmino. Was there a player during this past 5 year run that you really look towards and you were like, this is my guy. This is the guy that when I go to the stadium or when I talk about Liverpool, I'm excited again.
It's a good question. I think Firmino would definitely be up there. His importance to what we achieved over the past sort of 5-6 years was so, just it can't be talked about enough. But I think I'd probably say Sadio Mane. I think he was obviously Mohamed Salah gets all the plaudits and he's got the better numbers and everything like that, and deservedly so. Sadio Mane was, yeah, sort of, I think he was a bit more understated, but I just, the explosiveness he had going past the player, he was never afraid to take somebody on. He was always on the end of things that he shouldn't have got on the end of. I think, again, it comes down to that tenacity and his just desire to have the ball. He was just exciting no matter what he'd done, and it was just, he was a joy to watch.
Yeah, I think as someone who obviously played against, or my team was against you guys, he was always, you could tell he was fearless, for sure. That's definitely one thing that I'd say. And, you know, obviously when Salah would get the ball, you're freaking out as an opposing team or opposing fan. Mane had the same fear in myself. And he really played kind of on a knife's edge. I mean, you'd have the time where he gets the red card, taking out Ederson and that type of thing. But I honestly feel like, well, Michael laughs because we bring it up a lot, but I think you allow that because there's also the times that you just said, like, there are goals and there are runs that he would get the ball at the end of that you're just like, he's not supposed to be able to do this, but it's because of how he plays for sure. And I still bring up to this day, like, City could be as good as they want to be. Every time that you line up 11 against 11 with Liverpool, I'm like, yeah, there's a good chance we're not going to win this. Like, there's that setup.
Yeah. No, I think the difference with Salah and Mane was Salah, you know what he's going to do. Good luck trying to stop him. Mane was always a bit more, okay, what's he going to do here? Is he going to cut inside and try and shoot? Is he going to take it to the byline and try and cross it in? He was a bit more of a mystery, and I think that just added to his excitement.
Yeah, he might not even know what he's going to do, no. To be honest, most of the time. All right, so I think this feeling obviously can change with a 9-0 battering of Bournemouth tomorrow, but I know what I'm most worried about for this year. What are you most worried about?
I think in terms of on the pitch, I'm worried about the defense. I think the high line that we're playing isn't working anymore. Van Dijk hasn't got the same pace that he had prior to his injury. I think Konate has still got a few mistakes in his game, but he's good enough and quick enough to sort of make up for that. Robertson in this new system doesn't seem to be working. I just think at the minute, every team that plays us knows how to get behind our defence, and Alisson is being overworked. I think he's doing too much. Which it's great that you've got a goalkeeper who's good enough to sort of do too much. But for a team like Liverpool, you don't want your goalkeeper to be working all the time like that. You want him to have, you know, how many times does Edison for City get to just sort of sit there and watch the game? That's what a team like Liverpool and a team like City should be able to do. And at the moment, I don't think we're in that position.
Yeah, I think especially just this past game against Chelsea, what I noticed is, and it's been last year as well, that counter press, that defending from the front, what we saw like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we would win a lot of the balls back there. It seems like teams just go right through us now. I mean, I don't know if it's, I'm sure it's like tactics. I'm sure it's, like you said, just kind of figuring us out. But I just sometimes watch from, we lose the ball in the final third, and then next thing I know, it's in our own box. And it's just that hasn't happened 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and this past year, and then right now, obviously with one game, it's been kind of ever present.
Yeah, it is. It's like you say, it's easy to get through as you look at even the preseason games. We were playing sort of lower league teams from Germany, and they were scoring quite easily against us. So I was playing them off in preseason, saying I kind of want us to be a bit sloppy in preseason, get it all out the system. But then after the first 20 minutes against Chelsea, we didn't really do anything, and Chelsea were quite comfortable and probably should have won the game.
For sure.
We bring this up a lot, and I think that it's no secret, because even Liverpool fans here will talk about it, and we always defer to you all that are much closer to the heart of it all. I feel like that inability to stop the counter for you all, and it's not all the time, because obviously you're still a very good team, but it started with when Genie left and when he was not brought back. And do you think that it is actually a defensive problem of not having the right defenders? I know you mentioned Van Dijk being a little bit slower, Robertson not fitting in the system, or, and I know the midfield is going to be a hot topic for both of you throughout this entire season, but like, do you actually think that if you had the right defensive mid there, if you had the right stop gap, that the defenders are going to be able to have that freedom and be able to play a little bit better too?
Yeah, I think we will. I think if the defense gets the support from a defensive midfielder that they need, it makes their job so much easier. I think what we've really suffered from is the sort of slowness in replacing some of these players. You mentioned Wijnaldum, and you know, before this window, we've signed one or two, I think, permanent midfielders in like four seasons. It hasn't been addressed quick enough. Mm-hmm. These players have been overworked in a sense, and we've had to rely on them too much. You know, someone like Thiago, who is an absolutely phenomenal footballer, but he's not reliable enough in terms of injuries, and we've had to be reliant on him, which is sort of causing them more injuries. So this window, although, you know, some maybe Endo, I'm sure you'll bring him up, but he might not be the name people have been looking for. But I think he's a man to fill a gap at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we can, I think that kind of, I mean, I wasn't expecting John to bring up Genie Wijnaldum, but I do think that type of player is in a sense exactly what we need. Now, do we need a 30-year-old from like a mid-table Bundesliga team? I don't know. I mean, I've coached zero soccer games in my life. I've not, you know, I've no position to make that claim, but I do think we just need somebody who is going to kind of do dirty work. And right now we have a lot of talent, especially up top in the midfield. I think McAllister and Szoboszlai have like a lot to offer, but we kind of just need someone who's going to run their ass off and tackle people. I mean, truly, that's what I think he's going to bring. And I think that's kind of filling a little bit of that role that we haven't had in a while.
Yeah, I think his primary thing would be to come in and free up McAllister and Szoboszlai. He's more the type who's going to sit and not venture forward as much. Excuse me. That's what we need. We need someone who who's not really interested in getting involved in the opposition box. We want someone who's just going to sit and help defend our box to free everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about the position, I know, you know, the transfer, the lack of transfers or the speed of the transfers is something that we've already said is a bit of a problem. Michael wrote in here, like, Caicedo and Lavia missing out on both of them. A, you're obviously disappointed, right? But are you shocked that the business hasn't been getting done as quick as it used to? And then you can kind of two-part that with, you said, hey, we're going to talk about Endo. Are you sold on it? Do you think it's going to be like a 1-2 year thing that he can fill in? And are you at least happy that, hey, we have someone in this position now?
So in regard to Caicedo and Lavia, I'm not surprised with Caicedo. Mm-hmm. I think he was a pipe dream. We were never really going to get him. I never believed we were going to get him.
I did.
I did at a point, but then as soon as it kind of everything started emerging, I kind of just put that to bed and thought, just hurry up and announce it, Chelsea, so we can be put out of our misery. So I think, yeah, to at a point, of, there was just a point where I went, right, that's done. Let's forget about it. The Lavia one, I've said it all week. That's Liverpool's own fault. We messed with him. We put in bid after bid that we knew weren't going to get accepted by Southampton. And then we've gone back to him after losing out on Caicedo. I honestly don't blame him for choosing Chelsea over us the way we've treated him. What he said about joining him, I don't believe him for a minute that he's gone for the history and maybe the project. I can accept that, but not the history. But I said it today. I don't understand how he can pick Mauricio Pochettino, who couldn't win the league in France with PSG, over Jurgen Klopp. It's a strange decision, but good luck to him. He's not our player, so just got to get over that one. But that's purely Liverpool's own fault, I think, and that one stings a little more.
Yeah, I think I went to bed. I'm pretty sure I had like a nice 7 hours where I was like, Caicedo was done. So I woke up in the morning and I go back on Twitter or whatever and see everything else. And I go, oh shit, maybe not so much. But yeah. I agree. I think both of them walk into both midfields. Either way, I mean, Caicedo for sure, like, obviously one of the best DMs probably in the world, definitely in the Prem. And then I think Lavia is maybe not that exact profile, but he plays in our midfield for sure. That's the one I completely agree that is, I don't blame him for it just because, you know, and you can believe whatever report you want. If we tried to at the last second offer 60 million and it was just too late to do it. When you kind of sit there and you keep putting out there that we don't think the player is as good as 50 million or 55 million or whatever, I don't blame the guy for saying, okay, well, Chelsea's going to offer 55 million and they're going to pay me X wages and do whatever. So I'm going to feel more appreciated there. The Caicedo one, I think, is just weird because they kind of did the same thing with him and just kept bidding 80 million. But he also has dreamt of playing for 4 clubs. So I don't know. I think he's just kind of a weird guy in that regard. So
yeah, I agree there. As I say, it's one of them. He's dreamt of playing for 4 clubs, as you say. In 2 years, he'll probably dream of playing for another one. To be honest, in one of our other podcasts, I actually did say I didn't want him for his attitude. You look what he was doing in January, refused to go to training to try and force through a move to Arsenal at that point. He'd done the same this time. He was in London for 5 days, didn't want to go back to Brighton training. For all his ability, he's just going to do that to the next club until he gets to a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. He's not going to stop. He'll do it at every club. That's the end game for him. I think that's the end game for pretty much every South American footballer. Something you've got to accept. But
I don't disagree. I actually think how you were describing the players for Liverpool at the beginning of this, when you're like, I want someone to die for the shirt. That's not the guy.
No.
Since we're on this topic, and I know Michael, you can go on for hours about this, so please don't. But what is the feeling about FSG right now? I can even tell you that Liverpool fans here in the U.S. have a bit of vitriol for them currently. And like, what are like, just give us something. Give us your thoughts. Obviously, being a born and bred Liverpool fan and loving the club so much that you create your own content around it, like, what have you said on prior podcasts that, you know, you want to tell American Liverpool fans as well?
For me, I'm very sort of on the fence with them. A lot of people are very FSG out or FSG in. I'm solely in the middle. I can appreciate the good that they've done while calling out the negatives. It hasn't been all plain sailing. And, this window has been an odd one because it's been very FSG in the manner of how we've gone about our business. But then it's been very, you know, absolutely not FSG the way we threw the bid in for Lavia. So, for Casado, sorry. So, look, they're not perfect. No owner is perfect. I think for a lot of people like myself, we just want to see the club progress, obviously on the pitch, but we've got to not forget about what they're doing off the pitch, how they progress the club and its foundations. You know, they've rebuilt the training facilities. They're obviously in rebuilding the stands. You know, it's, as I say, there's good that they're doing, but there's bad that they're doing. I think this window right now, the last 2 weeks of it, is absolutely crucial. If we don't, I think Endo is a good signing. I think he genuinely is. We need to bring in somebody else. I think if we don't, that'll be a turning point for a lot of the fans that are on the fence, such as myself.
So if you had, I don't even know how to say his name either, Schmedke's, I think, is what is George Schmedke's ear, or you had, yeah, FSG's wallet, who are you bringing in?
I think if money wasn't an issue, I think if we could just go out and get anybody for this team right now, I think in that midfield role, my ideal signing would be Kimmich from Bayern Munich. In terms of who they're looking at and what they're likely to do, the name at the minute seems to be Cheikh Doucouré from Palace. I do think he would be a very good signing. I think he's one of them who, he's a similar player to your Lavia and your Casado. He's a willing defender. He's very good. He's good on the ball. He can pick a pass out. So the price is a little bit inflated, but everybody knows we've got the money, so all the prices are going to be inflated, sadly. But to be honest, I think they've probably got a list of 15 players. Endo was probably on that list. It's just not one that the journalists knew about. People think, you know, oh, we haven't got Casado or Lavia. They were our first choices. Now we're scraping the barrel for somebody who's a fourth choice or a fifth choice. I don't see it like that. I just see it as we've got a number of choices. And I don't think anybody's necessarily a first or a second or a third choice or anything like that. I just think they've got a list of who they would like. They'll try and work towards that list and bring in what players they can from that list. And I think Endo fits the criteria.
Yeah, I think I had not heard Kimmich for Liverpool, but once you said that in my head, I kind of imagined it. And I was like, he would look very good in that shirt. Like, actually, that's kind of a good setup. I love Doucouré as well. I think you're right. I think that it's really interesting. We've, again, gotten really into this at a time when both of our teams were very, very good. And for the most part, when transfers were brought in, you can kind of say that Liverpool didn't miss often. I think if I actually think back, like, sure, Naby Keita, that might be one where you're just like, that didn't turn out how we thought it was going to turn out or how they wanted it to turn out. But I do think that recruitment team wise, you know, scouting wise, there hasn't been a reason for you all not to trust some of the people that they've brought in. Is that a fair assessment as someone who's not a Liverpool fan as well?
Yeah, I would say so. I would think you're right. We do get it right more than we get it wrong. But I think that's part of the the issue as well is that when we do get it wrong, we seem to get it catastrophically wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
when we need defenders, when Van Dijk got injured, you know, we bring in Kabak on loan and Ben Davies, who didn't play a single game for us last season. We knew we needed the midfielders. We bring in Arthur Melo on loan. It's like, yeah, we get it right more than we get it wrong, but when we get it wrong, we get it wrong.
Wait, I think when we get it wrong, it's like, I could tell it was going to be wrong. Like, I'm just a guy, and I was like, this is not going to work. Like, Ben Davies is never going to play. Arthur Melo never played.
Yeah. That was our guy for a while. We were making Arthur jokes a lot over here.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's fair, though, too, and Michael reminds me of this, is like, if City misses on a transfer, it's really easy to get the money to get the next one. And I think for you all, obviously, it's not just having the great scouting. It's not just identifying those players. It's if you get it wrong, now you have to wait one transfer window or two to be able to get the funds or convince FSG to put the funds together or however it happens. I think that that's been a detriment as well.
Yeah. I think the difference with City and Liverpool is the management styles of the two managers. Pep is very, very ruthless. If he thinks that a player is not at the level anymore, they're gone. Look at Cancelo.
Yeah.
You know, he was fantastic for City for a good few seasons, and then all of a sudden you're not good enough anymore, and that's it, he's gone. Jurgen Klopp is he's more loyal to these players. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't move them on, maybe sometimes when he should be moved on, which has actually been very different in this window when you consider Henderson and Fabinho. But you look at the players we've let go on free transfers over the years. Naby Keita is one of them. We could have moved him on a long time ago. Gini Wijnaldum, Divock Origi, all these great players that we should have been getting fees for, because, I mean, to be fair, I don't think Wijnaldum should have went. I would have loved to have kept him. That would have been he's probably the one out of all these last few years that we've got rid of that I would have kept. And he was phenomenal. He was so underrated. He was underappreciated, I think, by a lot of people outside of Liverpool. But yeah, it's just Klopp needs to get a bit of more of a ruthless side to him, I think, for us to really push on again.
I think too, and you kind of mentioned it, and I think it was reflective in the Caicedo Lavia thing, is generally when we have wanted somebody or been, you know, you always see like they're showing interest in this player, they're looking at this player. When we've kind of wanted somebody, we just go for it, and if most of the time it works out and it's like a couple days and then they're signed. And the Caicedo and Lavia thing just seemed like it was the first time that we like really panicked to do something. And we in the past have not like spent as much money or been able to spend or do whatever, but we've always been very clear about who we wanted, when we wanted them, what kind of player. And that was the first time where I was watching it all unravel. And I think why I went to bed thinking that we signed him is because that's just how, when we get something accepted, it's done and that's it. And to kind of get played like that, by the agent and the player and everything like that, just seems, when I woke up, I was like, this is not how it usually is.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. We don't normally get involved in these transfer sagas. I think a lot of it is down to journalists and, you know, these in the nose, as they like to call themselves on Twitter, who just peddle every single name under the sun that Liverpool are supposedly interested in. And then we go and sign somebody who absolutely nobody's been talking about. That's how Liverpool normally conduct the business. But as you say, McAllister, the bid went in, it was done within a week.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, come out of nowhere, put the bid in, it was done within a couple of days. And now the same with Endo, that's what Liverpool normally do. It was very, very out of character, the multiple bids for Lavia being so public, the bid for Caicedo being so public and like that. I mean, even today, you had the Brighton chief executive on Sky Sports News in the UK talking about the deal for Caicedo. It's like, this doesn't normally happen with Liverpool. It was completely out of character.
for sure. So we always do just like a season preview a season table, like how we feel like the table's gonna kind of shake out. All four of us have a clear bottom four or five teams. Generally, I always throw us up in one, just because I, you know, think we're gonna, this will be the year that, you know, every year, especially when we were battling with City, you know, it's 1.2 years, you know, it could always go the other way. This is the kind of the first year, especially after last season and then kind of lack of what we're doing right now, where I can't see us with the depth as City or Arsenal. And then after, you know, what's been going on with like the transfers in that Chelsea game, I'm starting to feel a little bit worse. I don't think John ever has that feeling. Weirdly, he always is like the most fearful person.
So afraid of Liverpool at all times. Doesn't matter. I'm so afraid of Liverpool. I put him second this year still, and I haven't moved him. Like, I still think it can happen, but yeah, I have to go to therapy for you all. And we won. Like, well, that's the problem, you know. But Michael, no, go ahead, dude.
Just where do you? I think if you have your Liverpool cap on, you always think, you know, we might just score 5 goals a game and win every single game. It's possible. We could do it with the front 5 options that we have. At the same time, we could give up 5 goals a game potentially in some instances. Where do you see us right now? Like, what top 4, top 6, you know, what kind of category do you see us finishing?
Well, I'm like you. Like every season I say we're going to win the league. It's just, yeah. Even when we were terrible, I said we were going to win the league. That's just to be go to. And to be honest, in pre-season, I was so excited for the season. I was, I couldn't wait for it to start. I was so optimistic. And then the Casado thing happened, and the Lavia thing happened, and then the Matt Chelsea game, and it's a difficult one. But I think if this is the squad that we were going to go into the rest of the season with, I think we'd get top 6. I think if we can get another midfielder in, that change who's a ready made starter, I think then we're looking at a top 4. I think City are going to absolutely walk the league again. Sadly, I think Arsenal. I think Arsenal will probably come second. And then I think the next two spots, as long as Liverpool get it right with this next 2 weeks, I think the next three spots are going to be between Newcastle, Chelsea and Liverpool. I don't think Man United are going to be involved as they think they are. I don't think they've recruited well. I don't think they bought the right players. It's not that they haven't bought good players, I just don't think they bought the players they need. I don't think Mason Mount's a good fit for them. The keeper, I think, is a good signing, but
if he's allowed to assault people, for sure.
Yeah. But I'm glad I'm on board with that one. That was shocking. But yeah, he's a good signing, but he's not a game changer for them. And then the guy up front, I think they've just wanted a tall, blonde Scandinavian striker who sounds a little bit like Haaland to come in, and it might be as good. It's just, it seems a little bit desperate from them on that one, but I just don't think they're going to be around it. I think they'll get Europe, but I don't think it'll be top 4. I think Newcastle look very good. Chelsea have obviously recruited everybody, so they've got options. As long as we get it right, I think it's, I want to say we're going to win the league, obviously, but I think top 4, as long as we get top 4, we've got to look at it as a good season. If we can go on a nice little cup run, or, you know, a Europa League run, I'd be made up with that.
Yeah, I think the, before I pass it to John, I think the Europa League, obviously, I don't think a lot of first team, or maybe it'll be like split squads kind of playing in that, at least to start. But then once you get to the end, I mean, I obviously want to win pretty much whatever is available. But yeah, I definitely think it's possible. I actually said on our podcast, like, I can see Klopp kind of getting irritable a little bit, and he's saying, you know, players are saying stuff about transfers. He's saying stuff about transfers, how things are going. I think if it's another season like last, I think there's a chance that he just doesn't come back. I think there's a chance that he moves on and they try to do something else. Because I mean, the fan perspective, I think is pretty clear. I think you're wasting one of the two best managers in the world's ability with not supporting him as much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably the biggest overriding concern any Liverpool fan has got, is that Jürgen Klopp, you know, we all thought he was going to go, I think, at the end of this season, his contract was originally up, and then he signed a new one, and the difference it made to the club was enormous. Mm-hmm. I'd like to hope that he's going to sign another one after that, but if he feels like he's not getting backed, as much as obviously nobody wants him to leave, and to be honest, I think even a lot of rival fans wouldn't want him to leave. I think he brings so much to the Premier League. As much as from a football perspective, I want Pep Guardiola to leave so that, you know, City aren't all conquering. from a football fan perspective, he is good. He's great for the league. And I think people look at Klopp in the same way. I think if we have another season like last season, I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't have to think about it.
I think you're absolutely right. I talk to Michael about this all the time. I don't want Klopp there when we play Liverpool, because I think that he does have a little Pep kryptonite in him at times. I think that when Pep overthinks, he knows right when to strike like that. But there's no one in this league, manager-wise, that I cheer for more as a person, especially than Klopp. I think he's a great guy, barring a few times when he's gotten a little, you know, loud with referees and whatnot. But I think you're absolutely right. I think that the best part about the past couple of years for us, again, being brothers and rooting for these two teams, is there's a lot to admire as a City fan from the Liverpool perspective, you know, not just some of the players, not just the manager, but like the entire ethos of the club as well. With that said, we always ask our guests this, who are not from the US. We started this pod, like we said, 3.5 years ago. So now we have a ton of friends and a ton of people we talk to that are just starting to get into it and just starting to get into the Premier League. And here in New York, the population of Liverpool fans is huge. Like, it's tremendous. And I think that there's a lot to be attracted to that club if you're picking one. If you're visiting New York one day and you bump into someone in a bar and there's like, hey, you're a Liverpool fan, should I be a Liverpool fan? What would your pitch be? What would you tell them? Hey, this is why this is the best club to be a fan of.
I think just it's almost like a brotherhood. It's, you know, if a fan from outside of Liverpool comes to Liverpool to watch a game, to go to Anfield, takes it all in, gets involved in the songs, you know, every club has them. You get fans who go to the game who are just there for the sake of being there. They're on the phone, they're recording the game and things like that. And that's fine if that's what you want to do. But if you go to the game and you sing and you shout shit at the referee when he makes a bad decision and you act like a scouser, if you like, you'll be treated like one. I think we're the most welcoming city, and that Liverpool and Everton, to be fair, we're the most welcoming city in the entire UK. I think, you know, the history of Liverpool speaks for itself. And we still try, and the things that Bill Shankly brought into the club and Bob Paisley and these great managers from the past, we still try and adhere to them values. I just think Jürgen Klopp is me and me co-host on our podcast. We've said it before. Jürgen Klopp is our version of Bill Shankly. Mm. We're witnessing a new era of that ourselves. And it's just a shame we haven't got as many trophies as we probably deserve. But that's another thing. But I just think you're gonna go on a roller coaster supporting Liverpool. I don't think there's another team like us, in certainly in England, maybe not in world football. But I think no matter how high we climb or how far we fall, the support is going to stay the same. I think we could fall out of, you know, the Premier League. We could fall out of every single professional league possible. And I think you'd still feel Anfield. And there's not a lot of teams that can say that they would be able to do that. There's a few, don't get me wrong, there really is, but not many. I just think, I don't know. It's one of them. I've never had to really convince anybody to be Liverpool, to be a Liverpool fan. Yeah, it's just kind of, to me, it's obvious. So right. I never know what to say. But no, I just think for the history, for the legacy, I think we're just, for me, we're the biggest team in the world. And as I say, you go on a roller coaster supporting Liverpool, and there's ups and there's downs, but at the end of it, there's absolutely nothing that compares to it in the world. If we win, you know, you're in the best mood. If we lose, I'm in the worst. You know, 11 men shouldn't be able to determine your mood for the whole week, but it does. And absolutely. If Liverpool, it just, I couldn't live without it.
I think that there is a degree of envy that when I get to see Michael be the fan of Liverpool, and as a City fan, my history of picking this club is not what you'd think. I didn't just see them win and I picked it, although I get asked all the time, but there is a degree of, like, you get to see the passion, you get to see the brotherhood as you're describing it. And you're just like, man, if I had to do this all over again, those are probably some of the attributes that I'm looking at to pick a club. Again, I know it's really late there. Thank you so much for jumping on. Can you tell us about the Liverpool Groove, what you guys are doing, how our fans, because I do think we have a majority of Liverpool fans that do listen to this podcast here in the US, how they can follow you all, and, you know, what we should be looking out for as well?
Yeah. No, thank you for having me, first and foremost. It's been great to chat with you. So we started the Liverpool Groove in lockdown. Basically just as something to keep occupied. And we've always been, you know, Michael said it at the beginning, we describe ourselves as the most raw and authentic Liverpool podcast, and that's because we literally, like, I do absolutely no editing to the podcast whatsoever. So whatever happens goes in there. But I think people like us for that. It's just, it's real. We like to think of it as we're just two mates who go down to the pub and we talk about it if we went down to the pub and had a pint, but we're putting it out there and we'd like to give that feel off. So we just think we're just down to earth about it. We're not, we do go overboard a little bit sometimes, like we did in our last episode, like we had a meltdown. But sometimes you need that.
Yeah. It was okay. It was justified.
Yeah. I mean, it does. To be honest, I don't think it looks quite as justified now. But, but no, it's that's just, again, that's just the emotion of following your football team. But yeah, no, we've interviewed former players, fans of the club. I had a local member of parliament on recently. I'm just like to promote the community as well. So my co-host, he runs his own small business doing Liverpool t-shirts. He helps out the food banks in the city. So we support that through the podcast. We try and instill a sense of community sharing, even just like local people's work, if they're artists or if they sell t-shirts or if it's, you know, might be like a bakery or something. There's a bakery over the road from Anfield, which is really, really popular. So, yeah, we just want to try and help people if we can. And as I say, just talk about Liverpool. And if people like it, then great. If they don't, they tell us.
I love that. No, I think the community sense of it, again, like we're just talking about envious aspects of the club. I think that is a great thing for you all to do, because I think that is exactly how Liverpool is. I haven't asked anyone else this, and I promise this is the last thing, and then we'll let you enjoy your Friday night. If we do have fans of Liverpool, like I said, that listen to this podcast that we're friends with, whatnot, when they get to Liverpool, if they're going to a game, what is the routine of you go to this pub, you do this, like what should they prepare for? What should they be like, all right, we got to go here because, you know, Jay from the Liverpool Groove said this is the best place to go. Is there a routine that you can tell people, like, you're a scouser if you can do this?
So I'd say probably the main pubs around the ground, you've got the Arkles, you've got the Sandon, or you've got the 12th Man. They're your main three pubs. But if you really want to take it in, there's a garage, like a petrol station, a couple of yards away from the ground. That's where a lot of the fans congregate. They sit at the wall. That's literally what it's called. We just sit at the wall. You'll have your cans of beer or your bottles of beer, whatever you're drinking. And it's just everybody's just talking to everybody, talking about the game, what they're looking forward to, just having a laugh, just getting involved with it. That's what you want to do. Take it all in there, right outside the ground. There's merchant sellers everywhere selling scarves, flags, anything, you name it, you can buy it. Just go and take it in, go and get the actual. It's great being in the pub, going to experience it, because you do get a feel for it, but the real feel is right outside the ground, just as everybody's waiting to go in. Everybody's just talking to the mates. You'll be welcomed with open arms, and you'll never look back.
Love it. Love it. Michael, are you taking notes over there? Just in case you go this year?
Yeah, I got a little stick. I got sticky notes right here. I'm good.
Love it. Jay, thank you so much. I hope that maybe there's a title run for Liverpool this season. We'll have you back on. You can tell us where everything went right, how you knew that Endo was the correct signing, and you can tell us that, you know, you were the smartest Liverpool fan out here. But thanks again. We really appreciate it, man.
No, thank you. Honestly, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed having a chat with you about it.
The NAFTA Podcast.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.